Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord, I beat the case. That man be calling.
It is Monday, February 28th. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, not Instagram. It's the only platform that won't let us go live. So fuck you, Instagram. excited to start off the first week of March. It's the last day of February, first week of March. So get ready.
Don't short me now.
What?
Don't short me now. I need that extra, that last day.
It is the last day of Black History Month.
Mm-hmm.
So celebrate it. As you will, right? And go learn something today. There's my challenge for you. Go learn something today about Black history, about whatever that means, whatever you want to research, learn. Just go research and learn something today as the last day of Black History Month. Speaking of, Chris, wild shit, wild video. I didn't realize until right this morning. I saw this video yesterday or last night, and then this morning I watched it and didn't realize until I watched the video and then asked you about it that was in Akron.
Yeah.
The video, this guy coming out called this young girl, 23-year-old girl, the N-word, and then sucker punched her in the face. Mm-hmm. I saw the video last night, like I said, and the first time this morning, I saw one of the, somebody tweeted about it talking about this is in Akron, Ohio. So tell me about it. What the fuck is going on in Akron?
Yeah, bro. So that's down the street from my house. So I saw that video. I got a text about that video like Saturday night because the girl that took it is a girl that I went to school with, like all the way from like fourth grade. We graduated together. I don't know her too well, but every time I see her, it's like, oh, what's up? And the video was on her story. And I saw the video and I know everybody that was there, bro. Like that's literally down 5 minutes on the road from my house. The dude who punched the girl, his mom is a teacher at the high school I went to. The girl that got punched, actually, one of my first ever books that I read, he wrote the LeBron James book when I was like in like the fourth or fifth grade.
Yeah.
And I got a signed copy from her dad, and like her brother stopped me from getting jumped one time in Firestone because I used to talk a lot of shit. Her brother stopped me from getting jumped. But yeah, bro, it's bad news, man. It was right there in Highland Square. That boy said the N-word, and she was like, you know, I said the N-word. And then this, and he's a big guy, just like reached back and cleaned her, bro. And it was super fucked, like on during Black History Month, especially not ideal. That dude's finished, bro. Bro, I got to work this morning at the station, bro. And the janitor comes in laughing. He's like, yeah, man, it's been a tough weekend for my family. My cousin is over here punching people, you know, da 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 da. And I'm like, what? I say, your cousin punched homegirl? He was like, yeah, you know, it's crazy seeing your family and shit on the news. And I was like, bro, I wouldn't walk in here and brag about that, first of all. Second of all, I'm the only black guy that works here. Well, why are you coming in here? Like, your cousin called her the N-word with a hard R and then cleaned her.
Well, I mean, he's gonna get charged with a hate crime. I mean, that's not just gonna be assault.
He had his gun on him too. He had his gun on him too, Zach.
Yeah, he's going to prison. He's going to prison. His career and life's over. And you know what? Rightfully so. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, I mean, straight up. And his mom was up for a big teaching award too.
Well, the sad part of this will be she won't get that award, and she had nothing to. I guess, I mean, you have something to do with it. I know everyone's their own person, but I mean, at some point, my son, I promise you, he will never do that. And if he does, the cops won't have time to get to him before I smack the shit out of him. As a grown man, not as a child, but as a grown man, I would beat the brakes off of my kid if he ever did something like that. But my kids
straight
would
up.
Never do something like that.
Just wild. He punched the black girl, and I believe he punched the Jewish girl that was next to her that was trying to stand up for her. They said, that's a woman, and he just reached back and punched the next person.
It's wild.
It's unbelievable.
It's just unbelievable that someone could do that. I mean, just I just can't wrap my brain around it. I can't wrap my brain around reaching back and hitting a woman. I honestly can't fathom just cold clocking anyone, male or female. Like, you better swing on me first, and then I'm bringing the thunder and lightning or whatever you want to call it. But I just can't imagine going and just punching somebody for no reason. Like,
yeah, man.
Let alone a woman, and then let alone throwing the racial side of it. Like, it's just wild shit.
Yeah, he's in hiding, man. He's in hiding right now.
Well, he's if he hasn't been arrested, he's about to get arrested. So
yeah, no, he's definitely getting arrested. They had his name in third. I mean, it, literally down the street from the school his mom teaches at.
That's wild. How old is he? Around?
He's like 26, I think.
Oh, so he looks older than that.
Yeah, he didn't age very well. You know, they say hatred makes you not age very well, but he might be a little bit older than that. But just not ideal, man. Yeah, just, and I feel bad for the girl, man, because that girl, she's real small. She's super, super kind, super nice, would never hurt a soul. And all, she didn't even say anything. She just said, please stop saying the N-word.
That's wild.
Yeah, bro.
Wild. Yeah, but anyways, I could talk about that forever, but fuck that guy. Moving on. Did you see the shit J.J. McCarthy was talking?
I love it.
He said, what do you say? All we know is beating Ohio State right now, right?
And we're going to keep it that way. Yep.
Well, to be fair, that is all he knows. Mm-hmm. That's just not all everyone else knows. But I love it. I love it for the rivalry. It is kind of funny, though. Like, they win one game and can't shut the fuck up, right? It's one of those things where you got to act like you've been there before, right? Like, when you score your first touchdown, don't freak the fuck out. Like, act like, you know what? This is what we do. Like, this is nothing new. Like, you're going to see this a bunch more. Like, I'm not going to go over the top of this shit. The coaches are talking. The players are talking. It's just like you can tell that it's a lot of false confidence, and it's a lot of false bravado that I think they know what's coming this fall. And it's almost like they're trying to speak into existence something else, an alternative reality.
I don't think that JJ knows.
No, not JJ. I mean, just in general, the program and coaches, like everyone is talking shit. JJ, I mean, he's young. He was a freshman. Like he played a little bit. He has a bright future. He's cocky. Like, I believe he believes that. Right.
Yeah, no, and that's why I love it, because a lot of times, like, the players, like, I don't think Gattis, like, he was talking big after the game, and I don't think he believed it was going to be a long-term thing. But JJ, I think the way he looks at it is, honestly, the Michigan passing attack was the worst part of their offense. And I think JJ is supremely confident. He was a five-star guy. And he's a guy that plays with a lot of hatred in his heart. And he's a guy that feels like, you know what, I honestly believe when I'm out there, I think that we can hang with CJ and them. And I love it. You know, I usually don't love backup quarterbacks opening up their mouth about things. But for JJ, it's the right example. And I want this to get back to being a war, Zach. Like, I like when Michigan's good. I like close games. I just like it a little bit more. Well, it just means more to me when they're closer.
It's good for the landscape, right? It's good for Midwest. It's good for the Big Ten. I mean, having Michigan, Penn State, Wisconsin, those schools be strong. Michigan State, like, that's great for the landscape, right? If you're truly a Buckeye fan and you love Ohio, you love Midwest football, you love the Big Ten, you want them all to be good. You obviously want Ohio State to win the Big Ten, but you want all of them to have one or two losses and go to bowl games and beat SEC teams and you know, just make the region proud, right? That's what you want. So, and for the rivalry sake, I said it all last year, especially after the fact, but Michigan winning a game in the rivalry was amazing for the future of the rivalry, right? If Ohio State beats the brakes out of them every freaking year, the rivalry eventually just dissipates. It goes away, right? Then you're talking about the rivalry with Penn State or Michigan State or whoever that team that can actually beat Ohio State is. So it needed to happen. It did happen. And now look at us. We got people talking shit in the offseason. We're talking about it in the offseason. Ohio State is re-enthused, right? In that rivalry, they took one on the chin, and now they got to bounce back. Like, it just creates such a good storyline, and it creates so much, I guess, momentum and attention for that game come next fall, where there wouldn't have been that.
So it felt so unlikely, Zach. Them beating Ohio State felt so unlikely. Like, you and I, 2 weeks before the game, were talking about a hypothetical matchup between Georgia and Ohio State. At least in my own head, I didn't see a path for Michigan to win. And the way they won, given the fact that Ryan Day had the comments about hanging 100 on them, given the fact that, you know, that kind of we beat the brakes off of Michigan State right before, it really, really felt unlikely, making it that much more of a gut punch. And then because of that, Michigan felt like they could talk more shit, and that's what it's become. I mean, I see the Rod Farve in the comments talking about, Michigan was 24th in total offense, 68th in pass offense, and I think JJ McCarthy knows that he makes them better, and so I'm expecting I would expect that confidence from him moving forward, because I think that is super, super important. It looks like Zach's thing froze up, but we're going to get him back in here pretty soon at some point. He's going to not like that angle. So I do froze or tired or both. Boy, you looking. He'll be back here in a sec. I do want to stay on Michigan, though. One of the things that let me pull back the curtain. My mom went to Michigan. My mom is not an Ohio State person. She went to Michigan. So growing up, she was all about it. And is it true that Tom Brady is going to be an assistant coach? I haven't heard anything on that. I think that'd be really interesting. I have a theory about having hyper famous people on staff, and I don't know how good it is for the staff as a whole. Tom Brady here in a hypothetical world, if Tom Brady was on the Michigan coaching staff, what that would do really is put enormous amounts of pressure, because whether it's true or not, it's like having a hyper famous backup quarterback. It's like, when is he going to get in? When is he going to get in? When are we going to see him? And it could be the same thing for coaching. Like when something goes wrong, it's like, oh, well, Tom Brady would have made the right call, or Tom Brady would have done this. Tom Brady would have done that. And it would have been really tough. I'm discussing Tom Brady being a Michigan assistant coach and why that would be very, very bad for Jim Harbaugh. I think having a super famous person on staff like that could end up being bad news, because you run into a point where no matter what Jim Harbaugh does, if they lose, it's going to be questions to be like, well, Tom Brady wouldn't have made that mistake. Tom Brady would have done this. And reporters after the game are going to want to ask Tom Brady things, putting Jim Harbaugh in a tough spot. It's almost like having a super famous backup quarterback. It's never ideal.
No, yeah. It could be a tough dynamic, right? But it depends on the person, right? And I know it's on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
But when Mike Vrabel got hired at Ohio State, I guess you could have said similar things, right? I know it's not Tom Brady, but it's a pretty big name from Ohio State.
Yeah.
They got hired. I mean, I think it just depends
on. But Tom Brady is a monumental global name.
That's what I'm saying. It's a much smaller scale. I don't think that would be a good deal for Jim Harbaugh. Might be good for Michigan. Certainly would be good for recruiting and would be good for, you know, Michigan fans. They'd be all shot in the ass to have the guy that split time with Drew Henson could come back. Wasn't even really a starter for Michigan. Maybe then they could actually honor him and let him flourish. They'd probably make him the quarterback coach and not let him call plays. It would be like, oh, yeah, you're not good enough to call plays for us, just like you weren't good enough to play quarterback for us. And then he'll end up going to the NFL, calling plays and winning a Super Bowl. And it'll be like, you stupid fucks, Michigan. Because that's what they do, right? That's what they did then. That's what Michigan is. Mm-hmm. To be honest, that's what Michigan is, right? Donovan Peoples-Jones, like doing flourishing for the Browns, barely even fucking existed in Ann Arbor, right? Yeah. Tom Brady split time with a baseball player. Like, what are we talking about? Like, that's just what they do. That's what Michigan does.
If you went back and asked Donovan Peoples-Jones what school he would have went to if he could do it all over again, do you think he picks Ohio State over Michigan?
Yeah.
Hook him up to a lie detector test.
Absolutely. Absolutely would, because he would have been featured and developed and he would have won. He would have won games and went to like playoffs and stuff.
Yeah.
And I know they did that last year, but not in his time. Mm-hmm. He talk about wasted opportunity.
Just an absolute freak.
Oh my God.
Like just absolutely wasted. Like he was incredible. Like an incredible talent.
And you know what, to his credit, he still is realizing his dream, right? He was a late round draft pick, I think seventh round or something, sixth round, just awful. Not awful, but unfortunate for him, because he should have been a much higher draft pick. And, right. And he's contributing. He's going to get a second contract and he's going to make money. So that's all I really care about, is that it didn't ruin his potential future, but it certainly cost him, I don't know, $30 million, $20 million, whatever the differential is. Let's say he was a second rounder. If he goes to Ohio State to a six round money, I mean, you're talking about, and that's extreme, but we'll say something like $10 million probably. And not only that, but he had to overcome supreme odds to get to where he is now. Like kids that get drafted that late, if they're in the wrong situation, they don't ever make it, no matter how good they are.
They don't make the team. That's just so many guys late in drafts just don't make the teams. They're kind of just brought in. Yeah. How was Donovan Peoples-Jones in high school? And did you recruit him?
Oh yeah, I recruited him. I've told a bunch of stories about it on the show. We recruited him hard. It was us in Michigan in the end. He was a freak in high school. He was the number one player and number one receiver in the country.
By a mile. He held that. He held that all the way through. Like
yeah,
a lot of times that position especially jumbles up and down because you guys get guys with some freak things and then like the camp season, but he held it all the way through, never wavered.
Yeah, no, and he was that. And that was the same year Trayvon Grimes came out and Tyjon Lindsey. Like it was a good class. Not that they realized, you know, any you know, major success or anything. Tyjon still played, is still active, but anyways, yeah, DPJ, I definitely recruited him, and he was a great player. I recruited the shit out of him hard. It's kind of a different dynamic. Kerry Combs was the lead recruiter because it was Detroit, because mm-hmm. it was Cass Tech, the high school that Mike Weber went to, and Dave, who else went there? There's been a dozen players. I don't know why my mind just went blank on Cass Tech players, but we had a couple of them. Kerry Combs recruited there. So it was because Kerry Combs was thought to be this just ridiculous recruiter. He was the lead recruiter for Donovan Peoples-Jones. And I'm not saying that's why we didn't get him, but we didn't get him. So that is what it is. He went to Michigan. I don't think we ever were going to. His parents were Michigan grads. Like, I think he was going there from the jump. But Damon Webb, there you go.
And then I didn't want to finish it because I didn't want to be wrong.
I was saying Damon. All I could think of was Damon Arnett because everything was going on. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not even going to. My brain's not awake yet today.
I do want to ask Damon Webb. What does Michigan have to do to kind of make this a 10-year war? Like, what do they need to do to really turn this up and potentially maybe steal one or two in Ohio State, which I know no one wants to see on this side of things. But I am really curious because I think the rivalry being good is good for college football, like you said.
Yeah.
Are you over there looking up the recruiting rankings right now?
No. So yeah, they got to win a couple more, right? The 10 year mm-hmm. war was the 10 year war because it was almost a 50-50 split,
yeah.
On winners losers. So it was a war because and it was close games and it was truly a battle. Like really, what we've watched so far the last however many years you want to go back, even whether it's the last two, the last four, the last five, there hasn't really been a close game. Even Michigan's win was an absolute ass whooping, right? Mm-hmm. And then all the wins before that, really back to when Tyvis Powell intercepted the 2-point conversion play. That was the last. Truly, I mean, I take that back.
Curtis Samuel
overtime game. Touchdown. But those two were the only close games, really, right? Since that Curtis Samuel broke Jim Harbaugh's back, basically, it was blowout after blowout. And then Michigan this year blew out Ohio State. So I think mm-hmm. it needs to be some close games, truly a battle. But the back and forth is critical. And I know Ohio State fans don't want that. Michigan fans will certainly take it. but that's what it would have to be a 10-year war. It has to be close games, and there needs to be some parity in who wins. And right now, Michigan winning kind of created, I guess, set the stage for that to possibly happen, unless it just inspires Ohio State to such a level that they just beat the fucking brakes off them, bend Jim Harbaugh over, smack his ass, like, and make him call Ohio State daddy.
Make him tap out.
Yeah.
A November tap out. That would be insane. I do want to flip to the NFL. A couple things, Zach, that are on my mind. Eli Apple put on his Instagram story the PFF grade, and everyone was tagging us in it and coming after us. Eli Apple, courtesy of Pro Football Focus, passer rating while in man coverage is a league best 22.6. Tell us why stats can be deceiving.
I mean, because I don't know. I don't know.
Because I have an answer why stats can be deceiving. I know why.
I mean, there's a million reasons why stats can be deceiving, right? Passer rating, what does that mean, right? And when in man coverage. So my biggest thing is this: when I look at stats or look at anything, it's a lot like, you know, I've talked about awards, I've talked about national championships. I went on a show on, I think it was Friday, and the conversation was who should have won the national championship each year, right? Because the problem is you go back to when AP just voted on it. They just voted and decided who was a national champion. You're like, all right, that's cool. Who's voting? Like, what are your qualifications? Same thing with stats, right? Who is charting this stuff? Like, is it some fucking college kid that's half drunk making $5 an hour? Like, who is charting these stats? And that's why I hesitate to use grades often, especially from Pro Football Focus, unless when I watch the film, it matches up. Like I say, you know what? He played a great game. Oh, look, Pro Football Focus has him as the highest graded defender. Then I'm like, oh, good. Then that, yeah. You know, I agree with that, right? Because who is grading it? Do they have a bunch of coaches? Like, do they have a bunch of me's charting the film? Fuck no. It costs way too much money. They couldn't exist, right? So it's like, I don't know. I watched Eli Apple get fucking torched by Cooper Kupp and the gang. And it didn't look like the best corner in the NFL to me.
Yep. And here's the issue with stats like that. Stats like that are slanted to make the average players look really good. And here's why. Eli Apple is a fourth corner. So again, he's going up against fourth receivers. But then when you put up the thing like, oh, like the passer rating was 22.6%. Well, yeah, because that's mediocre on mediocre or average on average, I'll call it. Now, I want to see the stats when he's against those guys that are the that can get open and the passer rating is good going their way. So it's like once he's on guys, if you're going to cut him as like an upper echelon man coverage guy, then how does he look against the upper echelon man coverage beaters? And that should be kind of where the scale is. Because, shit, I can sit here and say that, yeah, I mean, whoever, you know, it's like in basketball. Like, Russell Westbrook doesn't guard the other team's best player. So a lot of times you'll see, oh, well he held so-and-so to 22% shooting. Well, yeah, he's guarding Trevor Ariza, who doesn't move, for 38 minutes. That's, yeah, okay, he held him to that. But what is he going to do against someone who has any inkling of talent? And that we saw it. We saw it on national television. We saw it repeatedly. I mean, he got scorched for the game winner in man coverage.
Yeah. I mean, it's there's so much more to a story than a stat, right? Mm-hmm. Which is why stats can be manipulated 100 different ways. Absolutely. And there's very few things that, like, when I go to Pro Football Focus, there's a couple things that I look at, right? One is it's the passing chart. It's hard to fuck that up, right? Like, how far did the ball go? I think anyone that with half a brain can get that right, right? So the passing chart, I think, is critical and hard to fuck up. That's what I really look at it as. I treat it as a bunch of college interns charting stuff that they've been taught to chart. And so you have to value what they're charting, you know, differently. Like, to tell me that the left tackle graded out at 81%, like, you don't know offense well enough to grade the left tackle. Let's just be honest. I don't care who you are at Pro Football Focus. Probably not anyone there, honestly. I don't think there might not be one person at Pro Football Focus that is qualified to grade a left tackle. Outside of in pass pro, they're blocking a defensive end, they get beat and give up a sack, or they don't. But when it comes to protection schemes, when it comes to run game, like, I don't think there's a person qualified at Pro Football Focus to grade the left tackle. Now, to grade the X receiver, yeah, probably 90% of the time, pretty easy, yeah. Right? I guess you don't know on an errant throw, was it a miscommunication? Did he run the wrong route? Like, should he be penalized for that? Or was it the quarterback's fault? There's a couple things you could, but I mean, at the end of the day, if you run a slant and get open, it's like, yeah, check. That was a good play, right?
I think rule of thumb for anyone that is a stat watcher is you use stats to reinforce tape. You don't use stats as the sole story. And the second you use stats as the full story, you turn into college football nerds, and then you get blindsided by things because stats don't tell the full story. You need tape.
It's not just college football nerds now. It's pretty much every major sports entity.
I just take digs at them because I want all the smoke because it's Big Chris Drew, and they try to dunk on me and then ducked me. That's what it is.
Yeah, well, that's what they do. Bitches duck, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what sports media does, though. They take stats, they take storylines, and they run with it, right? And it's like, wait a minute now. And that was pretty much the whole premise for taking this show to route it's gone is fuck sports media. Like, they don't know what they're talking about. They don't watch film. They'll sit here and tell you that Bryce Young is the best quarterback in the country when he is a dynamic player, but he's not the best quarterback in the country. He's not. If anyone with half a brain that watches football and actually studies tape that knows football can see that CJ Stroud is a better quarterback than Bryce Young. They can see that, right? Mm-hmm. Especially by the end of the year, right? I'm not saying early in the year, I would have taken Bryce Young, but as a player, I would have taken Bryce Young. As a playmaker, I'm taking Bryce Young. As a pure quarterback, I'm taking CJ Stroud. But no one will say that because they have Alabama's elephant dick so far down their throat that they can't, their eyes are watery and they can't see the tape that they're watching, right? Because that elephant cock is choking them out.
We believe in analytics over here, not analytics. So that's where we're at with that. I don't know what to do with you, man. So I want to start with, I want to keep going, move forward a little bit. I believe that success, organic success, like what the Bengals had, is all through the draft process. And lately, man, every time I close my eyes, I've, on some pause stuff, I've been dreaming about Jameson Williams playing for the Packers. No, playing for the Packers and getting thrown the ball by Aaron Rodgers.
Okay.
Clarify
that statement.
Yeah.
I'm dreaming about Jameson Williams playing with my what?
No, playing with the Packers.
Playing with the Packers. Got it.
And Aaron Rodgers. Now, I do want to talk about the Bengals 2020 draft class. They absolutely nailed it. Obviously, Joe Burrow, T. Higgins, Logan Wilson. I mean, Marcus Bay. I mean, they nailed their 2020 draft class. And then 2 years removed, all those guys on rookie deals, they're able to have a Super Bowl run. So, with that, I want to ask you, how many draft picks do you think a year do you need to hit to kind of sustain an organic run? Is it just one? Is it two? Is it three? Because obviously,
well, I mean, so anything fourth round or later, that's just like, I mean, that's a pleasant surprise, icing on the cake. Like, you don't expect that, right? Right. You go fourth to seventh round, you're hoping to find a Donovan Peoples Jones or someone like that, right? I mean, God knows, everyone's gonna say, well, you would love to find Tom Brady. That, no shit. We'd love to have the best player to ever play and get him in the sixth round. That'd be awesome.
We'd all, right, love to hit the lottery. That's what that is.
I mean, you get to that fifth, sixth, seventh round, you're hoping those kids make the team and contribute a little bit. You're not hoping they're all pros. And when you get a guy like a Donovan Peoples Jones who ends up becoming a starter and being like Jordan Fuller, like when you get a guy like that, that is just outstanding work by your scouting department and, you know, by your whole team. Right. So it's really those first top three, four round picks that you just have to hit on. And if you're talking about, let's say you have four picks in the top four, three out of four, gotta be it. And your first rounder has to be a guy. Like, you can't swing and miss on a first rounder. You do that a couple years in a row, and now you have what, potentially three great players you should have had that you don't because you swung and miss. Right? Those third round surprises are awesome, and that's what you're grinding for. You're trying to find those guys, right? You're trying to find that third rounder that should have been a first rounder, and that's all well and good. But those first rounders, man, you have to swing and hit, right? You just look at the Joe Burrow pick, right? Joe Burrow hit. The Browns' history of number one of first round picks does not, right? And so that's why there's a difference in organizations right now, because those first rounders just have to hit. They have to. You take Eli Apple in the top 15, it's like, oh, that was a bust. Like, swing and miss, right? Marshawn Lattimore, swing and home run. Like, it's, you got to draft Marshawn Lattimore's. You can't draft Eli Apple's. Oh, you know, year in, year out. It might happen once, but you make that a consistent issue and you're not going to get anywhere because you're missing out on so much elite production on the field because you fucked up in the first round.
My belief is you have to hit two out of your first three picks, no matter what.
I think you have to
every single year, and you have to hit at least a double at quarterback, or else it's all cruised. Because we saw with the Vikings, they drafted Christian Ponder. They had Percy Harvin and they had Adrian Peterson, and they drafted Christian Ponder and they didn't hit. And because of that, that set that franchise back all the way up into the Kirk Cousins days. And if Kirk Cousins is your savior, you got a lot of shit you got to deal with.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And I mean, there is ways to, I mean, obviously there's free agency, right? You can always fill voids with free agency. Quarterback's the toughest one because there's only a handful of great ones and they don't usually come available. And if they do come available, it is absolutely an arms race to get them. And you better, you're going to almost dismember your franchise to get them. Like, the salary cap, the ability to bring in other pieces, like, it's almost going to be impossible, unless you're Tom Brady, where you're going to go there and you're going to make a conscious effort to help bring and establish the pieces to win a Super Bowl, because that's all you care about, right? Some of these players are going to come out and say, I want a max contract, right? Like Pat Mahomes, I want $250 million and $500 million, right? It's going to hurt the franchise and your ability to win a Super Bowl, but I get it. Get your money, right? So the best teams are built through the draft and supplemented in free agency, right? You look at the Rams, I mean, a number of great draft picks, but also supplemented in free agency. They get Matt Stafford, right? They go get Von Miller. They go make all those moves.
And Jalen
Ramsey, they realize. What?
I was saying Jalen Ramsey they went and got.
Oh, Jalen Ramsey. Like, yeah. And but you realize, all right, we have a core nucleus that's really good. Now let's go get some firepower through free agency to level up this team to that next level and possibly win a Super Bowl. Yeah.
No, definitely heard that. I want to circle to the Bears as well. The Bears have to hit 3 for 3 here in their first three picks. They don't have a first rounder. But if you think you have a dude in Justin Fields, you do everything you can. I want to ask you, do you think Justin Fields could have a Joe Burrow-ish jump from year one to year two? Or do you think that's way too big of a stage? And what would it take?
Yeah, I mean, the problem is we're talking coaching staff now. I mean, they definitely need to bring personnel in. He's in a train wreck situation, but now we're talking about coaching staff. Like, will he have a coaching staff that is competent and you know, lets him thrive and teaches him the offense and builds a winner, right? Do they have that in Chicago now? That's a complete unknown. Whereas Cincinnati, you felt like, all right, you know, this coaching staff is doing a great job, right? They were obviously missing O-linemen like crazy. There were so many pieces they were missing. But you felt like in Joe Burrow's rookie year, like, if they can just protect him, they got a chance, right? And then they made some moves in the offseason and still need to make a ton more moves. The offensive line still wasn't very good. But I guess you have faith in that coaching situation, right? In Joe Burrow, where in Justin Fields, there's no faith. Like now it's a complete unknown. Who knows? Maybe. We'll see what they do. The first indication to me will be what moves they make and what picks they make in the draft, right? Are they really building a building around Justin Fields? And if they do, then I'll be a little more optimistic that this might go well for him in Chicago. Because right now, I don't know how you can be optimistic about that other than the kid's just supremely talented.
Yeah. I mean, if I'm them, you kind of hope that Jameson Williams is there in round two with the ACL and maybe pair him back with Justin Fields.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a look. But again, the coaching staff thing is such a concern. Is there a Ja'Marr Chase in this draft class, Zach?
I think Garrett Wilson is the most likely to have that kind of impact. I love Chris Olave. I love his route running. Jameson's kind of an unknown just because he was hurt. You don't know how long that's going to take to get back. It's he certainly can be back before at the start of the year, but will he be 100%? And will he risk re-injury? Probably not worth it, in my opinion, because he's that good. So I think if there is a guy in this draft, it's Garrett Wilson that is that good. He could potentially be that type of player.
And I want to throw this up here because this gets asked a lot. Could you see the Bears drafting a Chris Olave or Garrett Wilson to model the Bengals? I think they would like to. Here's the issue. To move up to get Justin Fields last year, they had to send a first rounder away, I believe. I believe the New York Giants have their first rounder. So they're just going to have to take to get in round two.
Yeah, I mean, we got to see what happens in the combine and pro days. I mean, if Chris Olave runs, you know, doesn't run something just spectacular, he may slip to a late second rounder. I mean, they may be able to make some moves to snag him in the second round. Garrett's not going to last in the second round. No chance in hell.
I don't think Garrett makes it out of the top 15.
No, and I don't think Chris does either. But Chris is the one that has the most to lose in a 40-yard dash. I think if Garrett runs high 4.4, low 4.5, he's locked. I mean, that's plenty fast enough for his skill set and size. Chris is the one that has to run really well, and I'm sure he will. So this is probably a moot point, but he's the one with the most to lose and most to gain, really, when he goes and lines up in that 40-yard dash, because that they just absolutely jerk off to the 40-yard dash for whatever reason.
I want to ask you about this, Zach.
Yes.
What happens when Master Teague runs a 4.33 40-yard dash?
You know what? I talked to Tony Alford about that on Sunday or Saturday. He's going to get a shot. And I was actually – I didn't realize he declared for the draft. I thought he was going through the portal, and I don't know why I didn't realize that or why I missed that news, but Tony Alford's the one that told me that he declared for the draft, and I was like, what? Like, but he will. He's going to go pop off. He's going to look like a Greek god, and there's going to be some NFL teams that think, oh, Tony Alford and Ohio State are idiots. Like, we're going to take a shot on him because they are just dumb. We're going to make him the next Adrian Peterson, and you're like, okay. at it, man.
He could legitimately run in the 4.3, Zach.
Yeah, he could. And that's all well and good.
Bionic straight line speed, and someone's going to second round him.
Hey, you know, no one is going to second round him, Christ. I think, you know, the good news is he's going to get his shot. And you know what? He might hang around the league because he's a big physical guy that can run. And that doesn't mean he's going to be a great back, but he could find a role on an offense and be a special teams guy, and he could play for a little while. Certainly has a lot of practice squad value at the very least. Not that you draft a practice squad player, but you know that plays a part in it. Like he could provide value to an NFL organization. And the guy I think about is Rod Smith. Smith was not a starter ever for Ohio State, but he bounced around, and he might still be hanging around the league.
I think
he was
still in the NFL.
I mean, he's been in the NFL every year. I turn on and go, holy shit, Rod's still at the Cowboys? Like, wild. And when the Cowboys drafted Zeke, it was like, because Rod finished the year before they got Zeke and was actually their guy, I think, down the stretch, the second half of the season. And then they drafted Zeke, and I just made me laugh. Like, damn, this is just like college. Like, Rod kind of is about to break out, and we recruited Zeke. And it was like, okay, sorry, Rod. And now the Cowboys, he was making a run, and then all of a sudden, boom. Draft Zeke, and he's like, motherfucker, not again. Here comes Ezekiel again. Not twice.
All right, Zach, do you have anything else you want to address or you want to get out of here? How you feeling?
No, yeah, that's good. That's good. Good show. I appreciate everybody for tuning in. We'll apologize. I got this fucking computer problem, and I don't know what I'm going to have to just build a new computer. I built this computer in 2015 by hand, and it was a badass computer. That was 7 years ago now. So, you know, the life of a computer is what, like 3? And then it's completely outdated. Crazy. So this we're going to need a new in-studio computer here soon so we don't have these crash issues. But appreciate everybody hanging around and hanging out with Chris while I rebooted. And we will catch you tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Monday through Friday. Also, do us. We need some mailbag questions. We didn't have any last week.
Yep, toss them in. I see one here. I see Chris Osborne has one. We're gonna get to that in a mailbox edition.
Yeah, Chris, we'll put that on the Friday show. So, and we appreciate Chris. You're always active on here and asking questions, and we really appreciate it. So we will pull these questions from this live feed. We will also pull questions from our social media, from Apple reviews, 5-star reviews, or 1-star, whatever you want to rate it. Just drop your question, and we will answer anything. So drop your questions for the mailbag. Also, be on a lookout tomorrow, March Madness.
Yep.
It is March 1st tomorrow. We will be launching at least our pre-launch of our two March Madness fundraisers or whatever.
And then the brackets don't start till the 16th, I believe, as well.
Yeah, to the 16th. Yeah. But we will start taking registrations, and we will have you, put you on the list. It's gonna be $20, $20 buy-in. It's gonna be really big.
Zach, I gotta address something, man. I told my boy Michael I would ask you about this. Justin Fields, Dan Orlovsky said that he, come around the draft, Dan Orlovsky came out and said, we have all the people saying that Justin Fields lacks work ethic. What did you think when you saw that?
Honestly, it was lazy reporting. Mm-hmm. I don't know who his sources were, but there weren't anyone that knew Justin Fields. And honestly, I'm not one to do this much because I think it's often, radicalized for clickbait, but that seems very racially charged to me. And I'm going to be honest. I think people say stuff like that way too often. It's like, shut up. That's not racially charged. You're just fucking trying to drive a narrative. But that really is. Like, why is he lazy? Did someone tell you that? Or are you just saying that because he's a black quarterback and you just assume he's lazy because he's a great athlete and a black kid?
And like, he threw out words like last one in, first one out.
Which is just not true. I mean, not only do I know firsthand because I know everyone at the Woody and Corey Dennis and Ryan Day, but like they would never allow that to be the case, even if he was like that, right? Because Haskins was kind of a lazy kid, and that's not racially motivated.
His body is so sculpted. So to sit here and be like,
well, it's just completely unfair and untrue. And so when he said that, it's like. Jesus, man, do your homework or don't just, that's like when, and I see Michael said it too. Like, it's like when Stephen A. Smith said Haskins was more of a runner. It's like, man, cause he's black. Yeah. Dwayne Haskins is a fucking awful athlete, awful runner, absolute beautiful passer. Like, but that's what you're getting, right?
He ran a sub-5 after the combine.
I mean, just it's, I don't know what else to say about it. Yeah, it was just a lazy take. And I actually like Dan Orlovsky. I think he does a good job, but that was just insanely racially insensitive. Not even racially insensitive, just lazy. It was lazy, and then he classified it as that because he must have heard that from some scout that doesn't know shit. And here's this black kid, great athlete. Someone said he's lazy, so that's my concern, right? Yeah.
More interested in being an athlete than a quarterback.
Right.
But also lazy.
Okay, I'm more interested in being an athlete than a quarterback too, but he's a really good quarterback and he works the game. So I don't know.
Right, Zach. That's all.
All right. I appreciate everybody. We'll see you tomorrow, 9 a.m. here on our YouTube channel. Subscribe if you haven't. YouTube.com/Menace2Sports. Menace out.